You're listening to WBTV LP Burlington, Vermont, streaming online at 99.3wbtv.org. This is Write the Book, the show for writers and curious readers. I'm Shayla Connor Shapiro. I want to mention that Write the Book is generously underwritten by Burlington City Arts, a public arts organization located at 135 Church Street that connects the community to the arts through free contemporary arts exhibitions, special music and cultural events, art classes and workshops, and a print and clay studio soon to be located at 407 Pine Street. On exhibition now at BCA, Ready, Fire, Aim, a show featuring numerous national artists in collaboration with the Hall Foundation. Saturdays at the Burlington Farmers Market, find the local artists market in City Hall Park. On Wednesdays and Fridays, starting in June, enjoy a free City Hall Park lunchtime music series from 12 to 1. More information always available at burlingtoncityarts.org. Today on Write the Book, you're going to hear a conversation with Emily Rose Ross, the youngest author ever published by Titletown Publishing and the youngest author I've interviewed. Emily is now beginning a book tour for her debut, Blues Prophecy, a science fiction fantasy novel for young readers and teens. Emily is herself a teen, 13 years old. She's a fifth generation writer and an owner of three dogs, Balta, Buddy, and Zoe. Emily began working on Blues Prophecy when she was 10. Living in Atlanta, she's also an animator, an archer, and a musician who plays the double bass in her middle school orchestra. She shares the byline of her book with her mother, Diane Lohr, an editor and marketer who helped Emily navigate her final revision of the book. Here's a little information about Blues Prophecy. Two genetically altered dogs, two different fates. Robo, a beloved Great Dane, is tricked out of the embrace of his human family and then is horribly altered by a scientist who rebuilds him with technology never seen before. It leaves Robo a genius, almost immortal, and with powers beyond explanation, but the suffering Robo experiences changes, driving him insane with the sole mission to destroy all humans, especially those who have tortured and hurt dogs. Meanwhile, Blue, a husky and scrappy alley dog, is trapped in a shelter when she captures the attention of another scientist, desperate to stop Robo from his path of destruction. Her difficult mission, save human civilization and the packs of dogs she has grown to love. Blue's Prophecy is the first book in the Canis Chronicles, a planned trilogy, I believe. When I spoke with Emily by phone, I began by asking her how she came to write Blue's Prophecy. I mentioned that I had read something about the first pages having been drafted in a McDonald's. I hope you enjoy our conversation.
Well, I used to draw a lot more than I write. So, when I was younger, I'd draw a lot. And I would kind of draw pictures and make a story behind it. And so one day, I was at McDonald's, and my brother and my dad were doing homework. And I was extremely bored because I finished my homework. So I got my chance at our laptop, and I just started writing this story about this husky named Blue, because huskies are my favorite dog and blue is my favorite color.
All right. And you had pictures that you were drawing at the same time of Blue and the other dogs as you wrote?
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you love art? Are you a good artist?
I love art so much.
Oh, yeah. Okay. That's great. Do you have art class in school every semester?
I used to have art every semester, and then I went to middle school, and I've only had art one quarter in the past 2 years.
Oh, wow. Huh.
I know.
That's too bad. Well, maybe in high school you can get back into art. Okay, so when did you start working on Blue's Prophecy, and how long did it take you to write it?
Well, for the writing process, it took me about 1 year. For the editing process, it took me about another year, and then this year we're doing marketing and, you know, like interviews and stuff.
And publicity and, yeah, okay. All right, so the 1 year that you were working on it originally, that was just you working on it by yourself. And then your editing year, that's when you started showing it to people and getting some feedback?
The first year I didn't really talk to my mom. And the second year because the first year, my grandparents, or three of them, died. And so I didn't feel like it was necessary. And my mom was too busy to actually, you know, shine the spotlight on my book. But as the dust kind of settled for the second year, we kind of got, well, Mom got a little more involved, and we kind of just started working together to edit it, and our goal was created for a box of books.
Okay. All right. So you just wanted a box of books, and you weren't necessarily trying to get published with a big publishing house or anything.
No, we were actually going to self-publish until one of my mom's friends said to think bigger.
Okay. So then what happened at that point?
We started really editing, and we got our contract on Thanksgiving, and we worked so hard on the editing process, I got tendonitis, which is basically carpal tunnel, but like a level lower than that.
From typing on the computer?
Yes.
Okay. Wow. So I know that you told me a story about your editing, you and your mom sort of, what did you do? You went to a hotel.
I think it was called the Westin. It was called the Westin, and we would just go there and buy as much junk food as possible. We would just, like, half of it was eating Hawaiian rolls, and the other half was actually editing. But our family is super, super busy, and there's so much stuff going on most of the time, so sometimes we just plan out to go in complete solitude and work on this one thing, which is editing.
So did you go multiple times to the hotel?
Yes.
Oh, that's fun. Okay, that's a really fun thing. All right, let's talk a little bit about the book. Your main characters are two dogs, Robo and Blue. So I wondered if you could just talk a little bit about how you came to find their characters. And I was also curious, Emily, if your vision for either of them changed much as you wrote their story.
Well, Blue was created because my favorite dog was Husky. And my favorite color is blue. So I just put them together and I just created this character. Because I wasn't like super professional. I didn't have like a typewriter. And I wasn't super professional and stuff. And I didn't think it would get this big. So I just created this random character. And I didn't really do that much character development with her. Mm-hmm. But I mean, that's how Blue was created. And Robo, I'm like, I need a bad guy for Blue to fight. So, let's just, what's bad nowadays? Robots! Those are bad. Those are evil. So, let's have a robot dog so she can fight something. And Robo and Blue both changed, like, a lot. Because both of them, because I didn't have an editor with me for the majority of, well, for the, in the beginning, they were both very flat and terrible characters. Like, Blue was just boring, and she was, surprisingly, she was the heroic type, and she, like, walked into the sunset because she was so heroic and saved everyone. And Robo was just evil bad guy number 100, 500 stuff. He was just a bad guy, and that's it. And so, as the editing process happened, we had to, I had to add all these little traits from them, like, Blue liking potatoes. Now, like, someone who wants to write may think, well, why would you want to do that? But if you can't remember anything about that character, then you've done really bad character development. So just try to add, like, one unique thing about them and yeah.
So the fact that the dog likes potatoes is one of the unique things that you added.
Yeah, so, and Robo likes chicken broth and stuff. Like, these small little details can do a lot in the long run for books and stuff.
Now, Blue is the protagonist in the book, as the title Blue's Prophecy implies. She's I found her to be a really fun character. She's a stray. She's had it very hard, but she's sort of sarcastic and spirited. And I just wondered what it was like as you were writing. How did you think about her to get to know her and to develop what her personality was?
Well, I kind of like let the environment kind of shape her instead of having her shape the environment in the beginning. Mm-hmm. Because like, you don't just come out from the bad side of Atlanta and come out like, oh, a perfect person. Oh, I'm so selfless and stuff. Like, right. she has been living off the streets, eating rats and potatoes. She's not going to be real happy in her situation. So I made her, like, impatient, selfish, a lot of these bad traits, but it makes her human, like, theoretically, not, you know, literally.
So, relatable from an emotional perspective. She's very relatable. We can understand what she's about.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, I liked that about her. And then the other thing I liked, I loved that you began the book with Robo. And Robo starts out as one kind of dog and then really transitions into something much different. Not because of anything he does. A physician robotizes him in order, well, I won't go into that. But anyway, so, you know, the fact that we start the book getting to know Robo as just a regular dog who has a certain sad history, it gives me, anyway, as a reader, more empathy for him, despite the fact that he eventually becomes this animal with very dark plans. Anyway, at what point in writing the book did you decide to begin the book with Robo?
I would say kind of at the end of the editing process.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to add more character development to Robo, because I did Blue first. But I wanted to start out the book with him because I felt like it would be a lot more interesting. And I don't want it to be black and white. I don't want people to think, oh, he's bad, she's good, that's it. If someone says, I think Robo has it the right way, I will respect their decision. And if people say, oh, Blue has it the right way, I just didn't want it to be the average adventure action journey thing where he's bad, he's doing terrible things, and Blue's good, she's going to be super heroic.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's really smart. I think the best fiction is more complicated than just black and white and good and bad. And I also think the way that the internet has affected people, everybody's very divided right now, and people do look at the world as good and bad, but it's not like that. You know, it is much more subtle than that. So I enjoyed that about the book. Now, you've already sort of addressed this, but let's just go back to it a little bit. Did you have any idea what was going to happen as you wrote Blue's Prophecy?
No. I just let it flow. If Blue said she's going to go somewhere, I wouldn't know where she would go. It's just, it's kind of like my hands had a different head. And it was kind of like walking a dog. You don't know where they're going to go.
Right.
It's like, are they going to go backwards? Are they going to go forward? I don't know. Where are they going to lead me? And I just kind of, instead of pulling back and restricting the book, I just kind of let it do its own thing.
Now, I'm curious, did you use that visual while you were writing it, that you were literally, like, walking a dog on a leash?
No.
Because that's kind of cool.
It's a good example of explaining what happened, but, as I've said, it's kind of like having my hands have their own heads. Like, right. Where are we going to take Emily now? I don't know.
Okay. The book has a theme that involves human cruelty to animals. And so I wanted to know why that interested you, and at what point in writing the book did that become apparent to you? This is going to be a theme in the book.
Well, it didn't start in the very beginning, but it kind of started in like the second or third rough draft, because Robo wants to kill humans, but he didn't have an actual excuse for killing humans. So I just wanted to show humans' bad side, that humans aren't perfect like everyone else and every other animal in the world. Like, I didn't want Robo just to be bad guy. Mm-hmm. And just kill off humans for no reason. He needed a motive, basically. And the more I experimented with that thing, the theme got stronger and stronger, basically.
Okay, great. Now, you have a lot of dogs in the book. It's not just Robo and Blue. There are packs of dogs that follow each of these dogs. There are groups of dogs that become packs. So you included a glossary at the beginning of the book, which I thought was a really good idea. And I wondered why you decided to do it, or at what point you realized this is probably going to help a reader along.
Well, I actually did it in the very beginning because I was reading Warrior Cats at the time, and they had a glossary like that because they had, like, so many characters. It's, like, not even funny. But, I thought that, like, every other book has that because I only read Warrior Cats, so I thought I should do this with my book so it looks more professional, kind of, sort of. And then I thought it was a dumb idea after a couple of, like, in the editing process, but people were like, keep the thing, it helps me out a lot, in the beta reading and stuff.
Yeah, that's probably really helpful that they were able to give you that feedback so you knew if it was actually being helpful or just looking like books that you had seen that did this.
Yeah.
Now, I know you have real animals in your home. You have dogs and guinea pigs. I'm trying to remember what else you have.
And a parrot.
And a parrot, right. So how many dogs, how many animals do you have altogether?
I have 3 dogs, Buddy, Zoe, and Balta. I have 2 guinea pigs, Pony and Reese's, and I have 1 parrot named Polly.
Okay, I love that. And now Balta is a husky, right?
Yes, but right now she looks like a rat because we just had her shaved.
So is she the dog you would draw when you were starting to work on this?
I always loved huskies, but I kind of always envisioned Balta as doing it, except Balta being a really bad dog in the beginning, even though she's perfect in real life, and there's nothing wrong with Balta at all, and she's amazing in every way.
Are you saying that because you're worried she's going to overhear you?
yes, she's watching me through the door. Like, are you saying it correctly?
The book opens with a quote from Albert Einstein. The world will be destroyed not by those who do evil, but by those who watch them without doing anything. And I loved that. I just thought that was the perfect quote, not just for this book, but for our times. But this book, it was great. How did you find that, and how did you decide to include that?
Well, I love science.
Yeah.
I love science a lot. I want to get an advanced next year, or advanced, not in advance. But I just love it, and my book's sci-fi, too, and it starts with, you know, it starts with all these science-y themes with, like, genetic manipulation and stuff. So I just thought, like, it's a really good quote to go with the book, and I just felt like it fit perfectly.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Okay, great. Now, you're 13, and you're in 7th grade. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay. And I know that you you play an instrument and you practice archery and you have friends and a life and school. So when do you find time to write?
I kind of rather lock myself into my room I'm a night owl, so the majority of people aren't awake to bother me. So I'll just have this strange like urge to write at like 4 a.m. in the morning, and I'll just do it. Because, I mean, I'm just sitting here playing video games, so I've been doing this for, like, 4 hours right now, so. I just, it's like a weird urge to, like, just write and make a story. It's weird, but it's a good urge, trust me.
Yeah. So, now, do you not need very much sleep, or do you have trouble getting up in the morning after you've been writing at 3 o'clock?
That depends if it's a school day or not. I mean, like, I go to bed at, like, at least 12 p.m. on a school night. But, I mean, I've survived on 4 hours of sleep sometimes, maybe, if I'm lucky, depending on how much caffeine I've had.
Okay. Now, we mentioned before that you and your mom work together on the editing, so I'll just mention that the cover of the book lists both your byline and then it says, with Diane Lore. What is your mom's role now in bringing the book out? Is she helping you still? She was helping you as the editor.
My mom isn't here with me. She's now Sydney, the marketing demon, okay? She's kind of like, whenever she's like, she'll walk in at like 3 a.m. in the morning, her eyes, like dark circles under her eyes, and she'll say, you should probably go talk to these people. They could help promote your book. And so we've created this name for her called Sydney, the marketing demon. Where if she keeps talking about marketing and promotion and everything, I say, I want to talk to mom. And then it's like, she's like, marketing, 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 marketing. And it's just, it's her job to market. but it's kind of annoying after a while.
Right. So she works in marketing, so she knows a lot about it. Well, not that funny actually, but the thing that's true is that authors now have to do a lot of their own marketing and publicity, and so it's probably really good that you have somebody who knows what they're doing behind you. But it is funny that you call her Sydney. Okay, other than your mom, who else reads your work to give you feedback? You mentioned you had some beta readers.
I've had two of my very best friends read it, and, like, one of them is super shy and doesn't want to give me any feedback, and the other one is extremely harsh. And then I've also had my grandfather read it, and he did the foreword in the beginning. And he doesn't care what I'm actually doing, but we're like, you should write the foreword. And he's like, fine. But, yeah, I've had two very close friends of mine read my book and review it, basically, before it actually is reviewed.
Okay.
I've also had my brother's girlfriend review it because she absolutely loves reading.
Okay. All right, great. Now, you mentioned your grandfather. Your grandfather was a writer, too, or is a writer, right? Mm-hmm. And maybe he comes from writers too. I remember hearing you're like the fifth generation. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So he probably really cared about it more than you say. I bet he liked writing that foreword for you.
I don't know. It's really hard. It's really hard to tell. Like, okay, Papa, ignore all these strange words coming from my computer. I'm trying to think of names. And he's like, I don't care what you do.
Let's see. The artwork is great. The book's artwork is great. It's a beautiful cover. So let's just talk a little bit about how that came to be. Was that the publisher that organized the artwork for it?
Yes.
Okay.
Before they did that, we did some sketches for the cover with Elizabeth Blant. And they just didn't choose it, so they signed us with with another artist.
Uh-huh. She did the inside artwork as well as the cover, right?
Yes.
So there's beautiful pictures of a husky at the beginning of every part of the book. And then that same face is the husky on the cover, but there's more. There's like a cityscape behind her, behind Blue. And then there's this sort of overlay of Robo's eyes, which is kind of creepy because Robo has one mechanical eye after the scientist gets through with him.
Right. Oh, no. Sydney's coming over here.
Cityscape is Atlanta.
The cityscape is Atlanta, basically, for the art cover. We really wanted to emphasize that because, you know, she's in Atlanta and I'm in Atlanta and everyone's in Atlanta nowadays.
Okay, but that's good because I think a geographical presence, people like that. They like to see their own city. So that's interesting that's the skyline. That's cool. And so the publisher did that. What else did the publisher do for you? They published you. Are they helping you at all with the stuff at this point with doing signings, or are you guys mostly doing that all on your own?
They got us into a BEA last year and this year.
Oh, great.
So I'll be going to New York in May, sometime around May. But for the signings, we've kind of been our own independent stuff, but my publisher's kind of like, the publisher is kind of like my mom, except everything that's not my mom. She's so nice.
Okay.
So my mom would be like, this doesn't make sense. And then Tracy, my publisher, is like, oh, it's so perfect and elegant and beautiful and everything. You beautiful person. I love you so much.
Okay. Well, that sounds like a great publisher to have. Let's go back to talking a little bit more about the details of the book. I loved that the dogs have sort of characteristics that I think of as being human, although I'm sure dogs do have a lot of the emotional capacity that humans have. But the dogs in this book are also able to kind of plan ahead and think outside of the present moment. When things are going badly, sometimes they cry. So there are human elements to these dogs. And then you also give some canine qualities to some of the people sometimes. And I loved that you did that. At one point, Dr. Dexter Roone, who is the scientist that is so terrible, he has surprisingly sharp canine teeth. Now I liked that, but I'm just wondering why you decided to do that.
Well, I kind of wanted to show that humans are kind of animals too. Mm-hmm. Like humans aren't as civilized as humans say they are. They can be terrible and as animal as dogs, and dogs can be as human and as civilized as humans, basically. So I kind of wanted to show the contrast between them, sort of.
Yep. Okay. Now, in the lesser, not lesser, but smaller roles, the dogs that are smaller roles, did you do a lot of research on different breeds and figuring out sort of like how might a certain breed behave? What kind of personality would a Great Dane have? What kind of personality would a Chihuahua have if you were to imagine it?
Not really, but I mean, we did think about Copper, and we thought, and I thought of the water dogs, the isn't it called the Newfoundlands? I don't remember.
Newfoundland, yep.
Yeah, new that those dogs. I did watch this thing about how they are were like ship dogs or something that would go and catch sailors who fell off the ship.
Okay.
So I wanted to put them in kind of like a watery environment, and I wanted to put dingoes who are in the sand ocean place in a kind of deserty hot area, because dingoes are from Australia, and that's super, super, super hot. So I kind of wanted to have, like, the packs represent their environment and the environment represent them, but for main smaller characters, I didn't really think much about their breeds when they're, like, kind of a little more important.
Right. Okay. That's smart, too, because you don't want to stereotype based on breed, which might be tied to locale, right? So that could be, yeah, you want to watch out for that. So Blacktail is the dog that's a black Newfoundland, and he's the leader of the Swamp Pack, is one of the ones you were just mentioning. And then you mentioned Copper. Copper was sort of one of my favorite characters. Copper is this bloodhound who is resourceful, always trying to do the right thing, and is from, I think, Alabama. And there's this point where Copper sort of breaks into singing this very funny country western type of ditty that's courageous, actually, because he's being very critical of Robo at that moment. But he was pretty funny. He had like this twangy singing voice, and I thought that was perfect for a bloodhound. I really enjoyed that. Okay, let's see. What do you like to read, and what books maybe have you read lately that you would recommend?
I've been reading I have a book with me. I've been reading the Lemony Snicket books, A Series of Unfortunate Events, because I saw it on Netflix. So I would recommend that one if you like mystery and unfortunate events.
If you like unfortunate events.
If people like dog or animal books, I'd probably recommend like The Last Dogs from Christopher Holt or the Warrior Cat series from Aaron Hunter.
Okay.
And I stole this from my mom. It's called Hyperbole and a Half from Ali Brosh. And I like it because it kind of puts art and writing in the same kind of genre, sort of.
Puts art and writing?
Yeah, it's not very good art, but it's really funny.
Is it like a graphic novel, or what is it like?
Yeah, it's a graphic novel.
Oh, okay. Hyperbole and a Half. I like that title. Blues Prophecy, your book, is the first in a series of three books. So do you know sort of what the second one's going to be about, or what's going to happen next, or are you not really there yet?
I've already graphed it on a piece of paper, but I haven't started writing on it because I've been too busy trying to get the first one on its feet. So, but I do have an idea. I'm just scared that the editing process is going to ruin it because the editing process is not my favorite process.
Okay. Now, your mom has the name Sydney for the marketer. Does she have a name for her editor role or not?
It's called Sydney, too.
Okay. Let's see. Your publisher is Titletown Publishing, and you're their youngest author. So I wonder if you can talk about finding, you said you found out on Thanksgiving Day that you were being published. So talk about that moment. What happened?
Well, since it was Thanksgiving break, I stayed up, of course, at 4 a.m. in the morning. And so I slept in until like 3 p.m. So my mom was kind of like prowling around the room, hissing at me to get up because because she was so excited and she wanted to share the news. And so when I finally got up, she told me, and I was like, I drank 5 cups of Starbucks Frappuccinos, and I just started bouncing off the walls. Like, it was scary. It was terrifying, but it was amazing too.
Now, how did the news come? Did you get an email or a phone call or a letter or what happened?
It was literally a package with like 14 pages of, and 14 pages of long, long words, and it was our contract basically. Oh, so.
Wow, that's great. So right now you're starting your book tour. Your book officially comes out in May, although it's already available online in certain venues like Amazon and Barnes & Noble. So what kind of book tour are you doing? Where are you going to go? You're doing some readings, I hear, or you're going to the BEA?
Well, I am going to the BEA, but our main focus is Atlanta. And I kind of want to do some book signings at my school.
Oh, cool.
And some bookstores that I go to a lot. And I'm also doing this blog tour thing, but I don't know that much about it.
So as I understand it, a blog tour means that you'll probably be a guest writer for different blogs that you find online that are looking for people to do guest posts. That's pretty cool. I think that's a great way for people to hear about a writer without actually having to travel or get on a train, get on a bus. Okay, let's talk a little bit about genre. You said before you like science and science fiction, and there is a science fiction aspect to the book in that scientists are surgically and medically changing dogs' strength and capabilities. And then the book is also marketed as action and adventure. So I just wondered if you could talk a little bit about who you think the novel's primary audience is, and maybe what did the reader look like as you were imagining a reader while you were writing this book? Who is that person?
Kind of a geek nerd, but like a good nerd, like a smart person, basically. Uh-huh. Like people who love adventures, but and dogs and animals and science and like adventures and action. Like a lot of kids, like boys, girls, as long as they like animals and science and stuff.
Okay. And so, like, what ages do you envision being interested in Blue's Prophecy?
Early elementary school to late high school. Kind of that little age group.
Okay. Great. And now, as I said, the book hasn't launched, but it has been out there for a little while. So are you getting a lot of reaction to the book from people who've already read it? What kind of feedback are you getting?
Getting a lot of really good reviews from Amazon and I haven't really gotten any hate comments, which I'm kind of maybe a little bit sad about, because when I get that hate comment, I'm going to be like, I'm a true writer. I am amazing now because people read my book.
Well, if Amazon stays true to form, I think that you'll get all kinds of comments, but I think that you'll mostly get good comments. But I think, too, it's important not to place too much emphasis on all of the Amazon reviews, because some of the people are, I think, not terribly well informed, you know, about the reviews that they're writing. Like the thing that makes me absolutely nuts is when you see somebody's given a book 2 stars and then you go to see what their review says and they say, well, I thought this was going to be about basketball, but it's not about basketball. And that's the whole reason that they gave it a poor review. So anyway, that's my 2 cents. You have to take these silly reviews with a grain of salt. But anyway, I'm glad you're getting good reviews. Okay, so let's see. I wanted to just talk a little bit about your lessons that you've learned or your thoughts about the journey. I wonder if you have anything that you wish you had known from the beginning when you started out writing this book, and anything maybe that you would do differently.
I would probably want to learn how to spell a lot of words before I actually wrote a book, because that probably took like half of our editing time, and I feel really bad for our copy editor, Paul, because he'll look at a page and he'll just shake his head and facepalm, because every word on that page is like misspelled. And if I told my 4th grade or 5th grade, kind of in between self, that it would take 3 years to do this, I think I would just close my laptop and walk away. But, I mean, I don't regret doing this. I didn't expect it to take this long. And so I'd probably spend a lot more time developing characters and making sense next time I write a book. instead of this time. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Now, I don't know a lot of people who write books faster than 2 or 3 years. It takes a while to do a really good job. So do you feel like you're prepared to put that into it again, or does that still sort of, like, trouble you that it might take that long?
Well, I mean, it's always going to be hard. It's always going to be difficult. And I kind of am mentally preparing myself to do this again. But I'm scared, but I'm also really excited to make another story and create more characters that are interesting and make this whole new world.
Okay. Perfect. Great. So we're almost finished. I have one last question for you, and I wanted to know if you have any advice for younger children and teenagers who love to write, who maybe would like to publish a book someday. What advice might you have for them?
I would recommend, if you have a large family or a lot of friends and they keep texting you when you're supposed to be writing, turn off your phone, lock yourself in your room, and just write. Because people, you can't write a good story when people are constantly pestering you to do other stuff like chores and schoolwork, like all that stuff that's totally not important, definitely. You just have to find somewhere isolated before you start writing, because if you're distracted, you can't do that much good. Another thing is, take some poster board and write out your plot before you actually write, because if you don't do that, or if you don't have that good of a story in your head, or well thought out story, it's gonna be a mess, and it will just take the editing process a long, long, long time, just like I did. And third thing I would want to add is, when you have an editor, if it's your mom or your dad or someone you hired, don't be insulted when they say something is bad. Because in the beginning of in the editing process, I was really mad at my mom because I felt like she was just insulting my book for no reason at all. But as the editing became longer and longer, I kind of realized that she's trying to help me and not hurt me or break me down. She's trying to build me up. Mm-hmm. Just in a really weird way.
Were there things that she or somebody else suggested that you change that at the beginning when you first heard it, you thought, no, I don't want to change that. That's perfect. And now that it's been changed, you feel like it was the right move?
Yeah. We were going on this drive, and my mom and I were having this discussion about Robo, and she felt like he didn't have any character development at all. And I thought, I was super mad, because I'm like, no, he's supposed to be evil, he's such a bad guy, oh, he's so evil. And then the more I thought about it, the more I realized that she kind of had a point. I didn't want it to be just another generic story, so I kind of followed her advice, and I wrote probably 10 chapters about him.
Oh, okay.
So,
did you write stuff that you didn't end up using, but it helped you figure him out?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. Well, let me just recap here. The name of the book is Blues Prophecy by Emily Rose Ross with Diane Lohr, published by Titletown Publishing. And Emily is their youngest author ever. Congratulations on that. It's pretty exciting. And Blues Prophecy comes out May 5th. Is that right? It is available now, but you're...
15th.
Oh, the 15th. Okay. But it is available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and everything. So, Emily, thank you so much for speaking with me. This was really fun.
Thank you for having me, as radio people say.
You're listening to WBTV LP, Burlington, Vermont, streaming online at 99.3WBTV.org. This is Write the Book, the show for writers and curious readers, and that was an interview with 13-year-old author Emily Rose Ross. Her debut novel, Blues Prophecy, was recently published by Titletown. You can read more about her work at bluesprophecybook.com. This week's Write the Book prompt was generously suggested by our guest, Emily Rose Ross. When Emily and her mom, Diane, were halfway through the editing process, they decided it would be a good idea to lay out the story of Blues Prophecy in such a way that the book's motive and their goals were always visible to them. They went to Home Depot and bought a huge strip of landscaping paper. They hung it on the wall in such a way that, standing on chairs, they could write down information about individual chapters and about characters. they were able to draw maps and include other details. The paper kept them organized and helped them find the story arc. Emily says it helped them out a lot. So her suggestion is that listeners who write do a similar thing with paper or a whiteboard, possibly a bulletin board. I've also heard of writers who like to use sticky notes on a wall, all of which offers a unique new way to see your work and possibly help you plan next steps, solve problems, and stay organized. Good luck with your work in the coming week, and please listen next week for another prompt or suggestion. If you're interested in sharing this show with out-of-town friends, let them know that archived episodes of Write the Book are available on iTunes and at writethebook.podbean.com as podcasts. You can visit Write the Book on Twitter and Write the Book Radio Show on Facebook for updates. You can also access the podcast at my own website, shelaughswithoutus.com. And then, of course, you can stream the show live each week at 99.3wbtv.org, Mondays at 3. If you have a guest to suggest or comments about the show or news about book-related events, please send an email to writethebook@gmail.com. And I cannot stress this enough. If you like the show, it would be so awesome if you would please rate it in iTunes. Give us a review. Tell us what you think. Like it on Facebook. And do tell all your friends about Write the Book. I'm Shayla Connor Shapiro, and you've been listening to Write the Book on WBTV LP Burlington, Vermont, streaming online at 99.3wbtv.org. Have a wonderful week.